Caskey hits this one deep to left field. This has a chance. This ball is gone. It's a walk-off home run.
Now Caleb driving left side. Alley-oop to Nelson. Throws it down with two hands.
Raiders make the handoff. Keeps it running left. He's across midfield. 40, 30, 20, 10. Jalen Reiner to the house.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast. The A-State Podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, men's hoops opening up the calendar year with the Virginia Road Swing, Old Dominion, and James Madison. We'll talk about those games coming up. Also, the women with a couple of nice victories over Sunbelt opponents on the home floor this past week. So we'll talk about a good week for Coach Dez and her bunch. And we'll tell you on the front end, no guests today because we got a lot to talk about concerning everything that happened over the holidays. And that is especially true in the world of A-State football because we weren't here last week. We took a rare week off following the 68 Ventures Bowl victory, the 38-31 win over Bowling Green, and man, just a great way to end the season, beating a really good team. I know you and I had talked about it before. You know, that was a Bowling Green team that was playing really, really good ball. They had won five of their last six in the regular season. You go back to non-conference, they lost by a touchdown to Penn State. We see now how good they are. You know, lost by six at Texas A&M, another nationally ranked team. So to never trail in that game, go wire to wire, we led by double digits on five different occasions in that game. It seemed like it'd go 10-3, 10-3. We went up by 14 late in the game and ultimately won it by seven. But that was a convincing win. Was really, really nice to have going into the offseason.
I mean, it really was. And I don't feel like there's a lot of debate or it's a real kind of going out on a limb say it's the best game top to bottom, front to back, all three phases that probably the team played all season.
I'd agree with that.
Came at a great time against a good team. And because the good thing, a lot of times we talked about before the bowl, the last time we were here, is that, you know, sometimes these bowl games boil down to who wants to be there the most. But that wasn't the deal here. I mean, like, had confidence that we would not look like the team that didn't want to be there, but neither did Bowling Green. Like, I mean, clearly their guys wanted to be there because, heck, they had three guys who've already signed with other schools.
Still played.
Played in that game. Plus, you know, the best tight end in the country.
I think he proved that.
Oh, my gosh.
My God, that guy's good. Now, we did do a better job on him in the second half. I looked at halftime, and I'm reading the numbers, and I can't remember if he had 11 or 12 catches at the half. And whatever his number of catches were the same number of targets. He caught everything that came his way. And then the thing that happened in the second half, yeah, he still ended up with 17 catches. But there were five times he was targeted where we either got a pass breakup or had great coverage. He wasn't able to make the grab. And I think that four of the first five times they went to him were incomplete passes in the second half. So we did do a little better job in the second half against that guy, but we're going to be watching Harold Fannin play on Sundays for a really long time.
And I'm not telling you at all this was our strategy. I don't believe it was, but I would say this. If they came and said, yeah, we're going to let this guy get all he wants and just think he can't beat us by himself, I'd say, yeah, that might work. And it kind of did.
Well, I can tell you that was not the strategy. Now, did they come up with big plays? Heck yeah, they did. The defense did some big things, and really it was led by that senior linebacking core. They were the top three tacklers, and Justin Parks was named defensive MVP. So thrilled for him going out, and what a leader he's been in this program. And we've talked about it over and over, kind of that culture setter that has been a captain ever since his true freshman season. So for him to go out as defensive MVP was huge. Charwillick has actually led us in tackles in that game, and he had a forced fumble and a pass breakup, and certainly could have been given that honor as well. And then Marvin Ham was our third leading tackler in the game. So those linebackers, I thought, did a really good job.
Yeah, the run defense was really good.
Their running back is committed to Virginia Tech. Shut him down. No surprise that big play that kind of got us going early was a special teams score with Courtney Jackson returning the punt 60 yards to the house. And that kind of gave you a really good feeling early on, because at that point it's 10-0 and we're not even 6 minutes into
quick.
The game.
Yeah, because you got the ball first, kicked the field goal, and then, forced the
three and out
and took it to the house. And when you can't draw up a better start. And so, I went back well after the fact. In fact, I actually was watching part of it just this past weekend, went back on demand and watched some of the TV broadcast. And I'll talk more about why maybe in a bit, but I do think the color analyst made an interesting point right after Courtney Jackson's punt return. He said, you really might see shaky special teams playing a bowl game because you might not played in a month and people don't practice it. Well, I felt pretty confident with a football team that practiced it. One thing you can guarantee is they're not going to shortchange putting in work on special teams. And, it showed special teams. And I know they made a big special teams play later on, but special teams, a huge difference in this football game.
Courtney Jackson was the special teams MVP. The offensive MVP went to Jalen Rayner, and thought just top to bottom, may have played his best game of the season. Extremely solid and in control, and finished 18 of 30 for 221. He threw for a couple of touchdowns, rushed for another. Corey Rucker certainly could have been given that honor as well. 4 catches for 107 and 2 touchdowns.
And kind of, to be honest, he'd probably tell you too, shook off a bit of a slow start. He missed a couple early. He's not going to miss.
And that 79-yard touchdown catch he had was the longest touchdown catch in 68 Ventures Bowl history and the longest in A-State postseason history. So Corey Rucker continuing to make history, but I thought it was just really fitting the way the Red Wolves finished off that game. And Zach Wallace and the offensive line just took over in the fourth quarter. And Zach finished with 15 carries for 99 yards and a score. Most of those yards came in the fourth quarter. And incredible the way they finished that game off. And we've seen that this year. And a big reason why this team finished 7-0 in games decided by 7 points or less is because they were able to wear teams down up front. That offensive line and Jacob Bear and Makai Butler playing their final games as Red Wolves. And I thought that was a great way for them to go out and then for Zach to do what he did in his final game as a Red Wolf.
By the way, what an interesting roll of the dice from, I think, a lot of folks' perspective for Jacob Bear to cut the mullet before the bowl.
Yeah, it was unexpected. And I ran into him in the hotel Christmas night and did a double take, maybe even a triple take. I'm like, is that Bear? And yeah, he...
Bold strategy.
He had a clean look.
It worked.
It did work. And
it is fun. I'm like everybody else. Like, where I love to see fast pace, sling it all over the yard on offense. That's fun to watch. But so, too, is breaking someone's spirit, just running it down their throat. That can be awful fun to watch, too.
Red Wolves finish 8-5. Most wins since 2019. First bowl win since the 2019 Camellia Bowl. And 8th time since moving to the FBS back in 92 that an A-State team has won at least 8 games. So it was great to see the seniors go out on a big note. I love that. That's really the first thing Coach Jones did when he got up on the podium is he just gave all the credit to the seniors and wanted to recognize them. And I love the fact that he recognized the seniors. I also love the fact that he recognized the band.
Yep.
And he said, our sound of the Natural State Band brought it all night long. And you just don't see a coach get on the podium, an atmosphere like that. I can't ever remember a head coach doing that. And it was really well deserved. And it just goes to show you how much he gets it.
That is true. He absolutely gets it. And two, that goes, and like that'll carry so much weight too with the band. I have the good fortune of sort of, we probably talked about it before, being kind of their liaison, their contact in the athletics department, which I love being. I speak their language and they know that. Like, right. I mean, like, I love working with the band. And, Dr. Allegra Fisher was in her first year as our director of athletic bands, and she's just brought a phenomenal kind of new energy to it. They too, that's a big old group of college kids that from all kinds of different places. They'd come in and get on a bus on Christmas Day and drive to Mobile, Alabama. That's a big ask. And they did it and never batted an eye. Same for our spirit groups. And they did bring a lot of energy in there that night.
Also, a big shout out to all the fans that were able to make it. And look, I know it's the holidays and that date of playing on the 26th. Not everybody can come, and especially when it's announced just a couple of weeks before you play on December 26th in Mobile, Alabama. But the fans that were there, we could hear them on the other side of the stadium. I know you were right there in the middle of it. It was good to see that scarlet and black on that far side.
It was, and I thought, of course, part of it, the way that stadium is made, you know, there's not the seats on the press box side are almost all chair back and more of a premium type seat. So everything bench is kind of across the way. So I think between that and two, trying to make the best look for TVs, like our both teams fans really were on the side of our sideline. We were in a section right by the Bowling Green fans. And I looked over more often than not and honestly thought their people were sitting down. This is one of the things I wanted to talk about is that, this is the second year in a row that at the bowl game, I've kind of by choice sat in the stands because you don't get to any other time or way. So, and I wouldn't change it.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can tell you right now, we go to a bowl game next year, I'm going to sit in the stands. Because number one, like I want to, as much as I want to show them too, that I'm not going to do anything or I'm not going to ask them to do anything I'm not willing to do. So it was fun getting over there, and I tell you, big shout out, kind of some of the unsung heroes of the game were Clune Van Andel's family, his dad and brother and their crew. They bring a lot of juice.
Do they?
They were right. We were sitting
juice
right
and energy,
there right
huh?
behind us.
Yeah.
They bring and helped kind of between them and Brody Bobo. That sucker never sat down. I think that's why he ended up on TV as much as he did, and that was all he needed. That's all that ego needed was a bunch of steady stream of getting texts of screenshots of him on TV. And I said I went and watched the game last weekend. That's why, because he wanted to sit down and scroll through all the times he showed up on the screen.
Well, I don't blame him. If he's getting that much time on national television, I'd go check it out too.
So, yeah, he did. But, hey, you know what? He earned it, and they earned it because, like I said, he was up and into it, you know, so much so I told him after the fact that, you know, we may find a road game to go to, or definitely when the bowl rolls around next year, he's earned the right to get to go.
Do want to mention a few other things on the football front because things have continued to happen with the football program since that win on the 26th, and certainly right up there at the top of the list is Corey Rucker getting on social media and announcing that he's coming back. And from the end of the regular season on, and I'll just be transparent, the feeling around the program, it wasn't like a real strong feeling that Corey right. was necessarily going to come back, whether he decided to just try for the NFL, transfer, even though I don't think transferring was ever something that was a big possibility with Corey, or just get away from football altogether. He's had a really nice career. He's got a lot of other things that he's into. There were a lot of things he was weighing out. But
we'll take people behind the curtain, right? Is this part of the appeal to what we do here? You know this, and I don't know how many of our fans do, but anything prior to the week of the last home football game, he was not on the list to go through senior day.
Mm-hmm.
That did not happen until just a few days out.
Yeah, and I got sent the list for senior day. I can't remember if it was you or Mark Taylor or who it was, but I saw Corey Rucker on the list for those 31 players that were being honored before the game on senior day, and I'm like, well, crap. He's not coming back. He's gone. And then I talked with Coach Jones a little bit later on, he still thought there was a slight chance he might come back. And then for him to ultimately come back, I think, says a lot about his love for this school. He wants to keep playing, accomplishing big things here. He's had a fantastic career. He's already the all-time leader in receiving yards. He's now over 3,000 following the bowl game. He's second in receptions, although he's still got a ways to go before he catches JD. And then second in receiving touchdowns. He had a couple in the bowl game, so he's at 23 now. He's three behind Omar Bayless. So certainly that goal very well within reach. But as much as anything, I'm a Corey Rucker fan, and he's just embraced everything about Arkansas State. And even when he left for that 1 year to go to South Carolina, it was really evident pretty quick that he wanted to come back. He let Coach Jones know that pretty quickly after he left, that he wanted to come back to Arkansas State, because you can tell this is home for him.
I mean, again, even when he had added himself to the senior day list, like we talk about, you fast forward that to when we were at Lost Pizza for the bowl edition of the radio show. There's Corey Rucker.
There's Corey. Yeah.
The women. You know,
he wasn't there just for one. He was there every single week.
You look up, you know, at the women's game this weekend, down the baseline holding the camera. There's Corey Rucker. By the way, interesting side note, Dominic Zavada was at a women's game this weekend.
I heard about that. He's certainly somebody we grew really fond of. And I'll tell you, his dad is still a big Red Wolves fan, along with the rest of the family. In fact, I get a lot of texts during broadcast from Dominic Zavada's father, who most of the time when he texts is listening because he's keeping up with the Red Wolves and was cheering on the team all season long. And I'll pass along something else. I'm doing this service that I really hadn't promoted a whole lot. I put it out there a couple of times on social media, but there's about 30 or 40 play-by-play guys around the country, and it's really set up for youth sports. So I get sent a clip of somebody's kid. They're playing baseball or softball or whatever the sport may be, and I can do a voiceover and send it back with my play-by-play behind it. Well, I got a request over the holidays as a gift to Dominic Zavada of his game-winning field goal against Ohio State. They wanted to hear my call, what it would be like if I was calling the game-winning field goal that Dominic hit in the final minute in Columbus a few weeks ago. So I was able to voice that, and I really enjoyed doing that, and I took it as a big compliment that they even cared enough to have me
neat.
Do that.
That's pretty cool.
All right, couple of other things to announce here. There have been some changes with the football coaching staff, and we'll mention the ones that athletics has already put out there. Nate Dreiling being the biggest hire so far. He's our new defensive coordinator. 34 years old, most recently was the interim head coach at Utah State this past year. Also a former DC at New Mexico State and Pittsburgh State, where as a player, back in 2011, was part of a national championship team at Pittsburgh State. Has also been on staff at Oregon, SEMO, and Kansas. And one of his coaches that coached with him last year at Utah State has been named our new corners coach. Jalen Ortiz has come in as well. But Nate Dreiling, the new DC.
And I had some people, you know, that I know in athletics that have just been with him at other places, wherever, crossed paths with him, worked at the same school, same time, different places, that sent me kind of unsolicited texts when this news came out and said, you're going to love Nate Dreiling.
Looking forward to working with him. And again, for somebody to be even named an interim head coach at 33, 34 years old is a big deal. And then for him to come here, and obviously an up-and-coming talented coach, I know Butch Jones feels extremely good about him and what he's going to be able to do for the Red Wolves on the defensive side of the ball. So excited to get to know Coach Dreiling and Coach Ortiz. And I know we've got some other names that are going to be announced very soon as well. Also really happy for Nick Grimes, who this past season was our tight ends coach. And after Andy Kwan took the job at UCLA as the offensive line coach there, Coach Grimes kind of stepped into that O-line coaching role, the interim offensive line coach, if you will, for the bowl game. Coach Jones was really impressed with what he saw. And obviously, he's been around Coach Grimes these last couple of years with him coaching the tight ends. But yeah, he's been promoted to that offensive line coach role full-time now. He's also the run game coordinator. Not the first time we've had an offensive line coach named Grimes, because his dad, J.B. Grimes, as a lot of people remember, was the O-line coach under Coach Malzahn back in 2012.
And just announced as going to be a new inductee into the Arkansas Sports Hall of Fame, J.B. is.
I just remember during our recruiting event back in early December, Nick Grimes' name got brought up a lot, just how big he was as far as the recruiting was concerned with this number one class that we brought in. So a lot of things to like about Nick Grimes, and really, really happy for him.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars.
Bring a vehicle,
get a check. Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact, spelled ImpactClub.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Back on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. Men's basketball was back in action after 12 days between games. You know, they had won the conference opener back before Christmas on December 21st, that 30-point win at home over Coastal Carolina. But they didn't play again until this past Thursday at Old Dominion. It was the first of four in a row on the road. I guess we should have expected it after nearly 2 weeks between games. It was a little bit of a rusty start. In fact, we didn't score in that game for nearly 7 minutes. And it was 6-0 ODU for what seemed like forever. And then finally we hit a shot with just over 13 minutes to go in the first half. And it was fine after that. You know, the offense, I think the rest of that game shot 50% from the field, but they were able to shake off the rust and in full control from that point on.
Pretty quirky kind of part with the conference schedule where, you know, the men played one conference game the weekend before Christmas and then didn't play again. The women sat that week and played one conference game the week after Christmas and then got into the groove. So a lot of those men's teams did a lot of, not sitting, but, you know, they took a little bit of a break there Christmas week. So probably not a big shock that I bet more than one team dealt with some ring rust.
Terrence Ford was outstanding in that ODU game. He had a season-high 21 points. He was 9 of 10 from the field. His only miss was his easiest shot. It was a layup, and otherwise was perfect all night long. But he was just phenomenal. 5 assists, no turnovers. Taron Todd, 17 points, 7 boards, 5 assists. DeAndre Dominguez came in off the bench. He had 11 points. And I always like to look at the plus-minus ratio, just how the team did. You know, while he was on the floor, we were a plus 30, which was best on the team. Yeah, you know, the biggest thing to take out of the ODU game was the defense. Number one, held them to 26.6% from the field. It was the lowest opposing field goal percentage in a Sun Belt game in 11 years. You got to go back to 2014 against Little Rock, last time we held an opponent that low in a conference game. And a big part of it is Darian Ford. He's that guy that we just sick on the other team's best player. Our fans have noticed that, yes, he's a big plus on the offensive end, but defensively, you kind of lose sight sometimes of just how good Darian is on that end of the floor. And they put him on Robert Davis, who was their leading scorer. He was averaging 15 a game. He was leading the Sun Belt in three-pointers made. I think he had hit 46 already this year. And Darian held him to 1 for 10 from 3, 1 for 12 overall. And the one shot he made came with just over a minute to go in the game when it was already decided. And I'm going to throw out a comparison here. And I haven't said this at any point, but certainly you can respect it because you watched this guy's entire career. But I see a lot of parallels between Darian Ford and Trey Finn.
That's where I thought you were headed, honestly.
Because Trey was a phenomenal player for us. But John Brady, his deal was he was going to sic Trey Finn on whoever the other team's best player was. And so many times he would do the same thing Darian's doing now. He'd shut him down. He was just that lockdown defender. And then Trey, just like Darian, certainly a big help on the offensive end as well. But I'm seeing more and more parallels between those two.
Yeah, that's good. And, you know, the same kind of body type where there's bigger, thicker, strong body, which helps do what we're talking about them doing. And, you know, I know he continues to work and evolve his offensive game, but, you know, he doesn't have to provide a whole lot of offense to, you know, be worth his weight out there for what he's the points he's keeping the other team from scoring.
And neither one says a lot. They're hard workers and just overall great dudes. James Madison on Saturday, a rematch of last year's Sun Belt Championship game, led for over 30 minutes in that one. Up by 13 in the first half. We were up by 6 at halftime, but look, it's tough to win on the road. That place got as loud as I can ever remember an opposing arena in the Sun Belt. In the second half, it got really, really loud in there. So their fans were a big part of it. I think as much as anything, though, it was probably the rebounding difference, especially in the second half. They were able to extend a lot of possessions. James Madison ended up plus 11 on the glass. They out-rebounded us 41-30. They had 15 offensive rebounds. And look, defense wasn't bad. Held them to 67 points, 40% shooting. We forced 15 turnovers. But in the end, they're able to win it 67-62.
I mean, right? So, yeah, 2-1 in the league. And the one is a game down to the wire in what you said would be the toughest road environment you'll play in conference play. And, oh, you haven't had the preseason player of the year?
Hadn't played yet in conference play.
Yeah.
So Kobe's still out. And hopefully that'll change very soon.
So you're okay.
Women's basketball was more than okay this past week. A great week for Destiny Rogers' team. Hosted Marshall on Thursday. That had to be an interesting game to call. They trailed 20-9 after the first quarter.
And actually,
it came alive.
It was 20-6 because it hit a three right at the end of the first quarter.
Oh, that's what sparked them the rest of the way, huh?
And then hit a three at the end of the first quarter to make it 20-9. Hit a three right at the buzzer at the half to make it a three-point game. Kind of went back and forth, trading punches in the third quarter, and then just went crazy in the fourth where they hit 7 out of 9 from three-point range in the fourth quarter.
Wow. And they hit 13 threes for the game. Shaunae Brown with 12 points to lead the way. Zion Shannon, 9 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds. And Chrislyn Rose in that Marshall win, 8 points, 5 boards, and 10 assists.
They'd come in 1-2 in the league, Marshall and A-State, in both three-pointers made and three-pointers attempted. Marshall actually was just a little ahead. A-State was second in the league in three-pointers going into the Marshall game, but Red Wolves hit 13, and I think Marshall hit 3. So
I checked this morning, and our women are now tops in the conference in both attempts and makes.
Yep.
And they're 6th in the nation in three-pointers made per game, about 10.5 per game.
And it was 10.1 going into last week. But not to jump ahead, but they went 7 of 9 in the fourth quarter and then came out in that Georgia Southern game Saturday and in the first quarter hit 6 of their first 7.
Man, that's
so
quite
they went
a stretch.
Through, they went through about a 16-minute stretch of game time where they were 13 out of 16 from the three-point line.
Yeah, they won the Marshall game 66-56, came back Saturday, beat Georgia Southern 76-73, ended up making 11 threes in that game, and 4 players finished in double figures. Kiana Morgan with 16 points, Chrislyn Rose with another big game. She had 15 points and 6 assists, but the women, like the men, off to a 2-1 start in conference play.
They're fun to watch, I'm telling you, because of those spurts we're talking about. Like, they can be going along, and you think they're in a lull, and then all of a sudden somebody will hit a shot, and then once somebody hits one, then
contagious.
Everybody just starts hitting them, and they can just go through stretches where they score points in a hurry.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Coach Brian Hodson, and I'm asking you to help our A-State student-athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This organization helps our program stay competitive and supports our student-athletes by facilitating NIL agreements that allow them to endorse local charities. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Wolves up.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Looking at the week ahead, men's basketball still on the road, and they'll play the Alabama Swing this week. And look, with respect to everybody else in the league, and we still got a long way to go in conference play, this is probably going to be the toughest week of conference play, because you're going on the road to face two really, really good teams, Thursday at South Alabama and Saturday at Troy. We'll start with South, because I don't know how many people saw this coming. In fact, they were picked 10th in the preseason poll, which kind of tells you again just how meaningless those things are. But they're 11-4. And they're 3-0 in the league. And they're not just 3-0 in conference play. Their three wins are by 26, 28, and 29 points against conference teams. They're just beating the brains out of people. And I'm really interested to see how this one plays out. Hopefully, Kobe Julian is able to be back this week. The Red Wolves could certainly use him, but that's going to be a huge test Thursday. And then going to be at Troy Saturday at 3:30. They're picked top three in the league, and they're also, like South Alabama, off to a 3-0 start in the league.
Yeah, you wouldn't have necessarily glanced at it and said this would be your toughest week, and that's mostly because of what you're talking about with South Alabama. You knew the Troy game would be one that was kind of circled, but now all of a sudden, like, you look at that three-game stretch where you go two James Madison, two South Alabama, two Troy, and that's as hard as it gets in the conference.
Yeah, we may be playing our three toughest conference games, three straight games here. And you could certainly make a good case for that. The women will be on the road as well. They play Wednesday at 7 at Texas State. Texas State 7-6 overall. They're 1-2 in the league. And then
it's always a tough place to go.
It is a tough place to win in San Marcos. And then they'll actually, with that Wednesday night game, they'll stay on the road, but they got a couple of days in between. They'll eventually end up in Monroe. They'll take on ULM Saturday at 2. They're also 1-2 in conference play.
But they're a lot better. I mean, they'd made a huge jump last year a coaching change. That's no picnic either. This is that's a two tough road trips to play on the same week out there for the women.
Indoor track and field will get back to action this weekend. They'll be participating in a couple of meets, the Alexis Jarrett Invitational in Columbia, Missouri, and then we'll have some athletes over at the Commodore Challenge in Nashville. And tennis, they've been off the last couple of months. They'll return to play. They'll be in Tulsa this weekend, a multi-team event with Tulsa, Louisiana Tech, and Wyoming.
Hopefully the weather works for them to make that trip over there.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, I don't think if you do, you're going to be on the back end. I mean, it's just going to be a matter of...
Yeah, I'll be getting out of here, going down to Alabama on Thursday. I think it's still going to be cold down there, but maybe not as bad as it is back here.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be dealing with what they say we could potentially Thursday night into Friday here.
All right, so before we get out of here, I want to hear a little bit about what happened over the holidays, because I know you took the whole family
right
down to Mobile for the bowl game and stayed down there for a little while, didn't you?
Yeah. It was fun to go down, and our whole crew of six went to the bowl, and had a good time. My wife's told me a lot of times since the game how proud she was. She said nobody even complained about how late the game started or what. And really, it'd be our youngest one that would have. He doesn't usually have to work too hard to find something to complain about. And not even he really griped much with the late kick time, and had a good time, and you know, went back to the team hotel on Thursday night, and then Friday slid down to Orange Beach and spent a little long weekend there. Got one good sunny day on Sunday for everybody to be outside all day long, and came back home on Monday. But it was fun, I mean, because everybody, even when it was rainy and stuff, one big day shopping in Foley because everybody had Christmas money and two Bucky stops.
It's amazing how much of a destination that place has turned into.
It is crazy. It was.
We do it going to Pensacola too. I mean, that's right on the way to the Sun Belt basketball.
That was the one. That's where you turn off. And so, coming and going, stopped at Bucky's. And once I actually got gas there, one of the 500 gas pumps.
Talked about that long day on the bowl game. Our crew had driven down Christmas Day, left about 12:30, got there that night, dinner at the hotel because there's really no other place open. And then we wanted to get some coverage in from the hotel, so we did 9 to 1 that day. So we went on the air at 9, quick lunch, headed out to the stadium, and then did the broadcast. And by the time we left the stadium, it was 1 a.m. I kind of put it together. I said, man, we went on the air 16 hours ago. So that was a long, long day, but a good day because of the way it ended up. And certainly,
without a win, you wouldn't have been on the air so long. So
No, we certainly would have got off a whole lot sooner. The losing team in the bowl is probably going to be off the air about a good 30, 40 minutes sooner than the winning team. And then, the travel this past weekend with the Virginia trip. I'm still getting used to Virginia. I'm learning a lot of things. It's not the same as these other trips that, I've been to Lafayette and Monroe and Mobile and Troy a million times. I didn't know. I had a car, so I'm driving from Norfolk to Harrisonburg. I didn't know what I'd be driving past, how long it was. It's a 3.5-hour drive, by the way, from Norfolk to Harrisonburg. You drive through Charlottesville on the way. I started looking at it, and I had a little time to kill on Friday, so I'm like, well, go check out Monticello and see where Thomas Jefferson, his house was, and walk around his estate. So I did that. I got out and spent about an hour and a half there, and really neat kind of walking tour you can do. Now, my timing was not great. It's kind of up on the top of a mountain. As soon as I got there, the wind picked up. It was already about 30 degrees, and it was snowing. So probably not ideal. It did die down a little bit about 5 minutes after I got up top, so I was able to walk around for a while. But there's probably better times to go to that place.
Well, that is cool.
It is cool. So anyway, we're glad to be back from the holidays. We'll have some really good guests coming up on this podcast very soon. I know we've got a list that we're going to try to get to. And certainly one person we'll be having in very soon is Butch Jones, because he said to me over the holidays, I need to get on the podcast and catch everybody up on everything that's been going on. So we got a lot to cover with him.
I thought maybe he did feel like it could have been a stroke of genius on our part. You know, we had those boys on there a couple weeks ago, and so maybe now it speeds him up. Maybe he thinks he's got some things he's got to rebut.
Well, we could cover that too.
I saw Miss Barb at the bowl game, and she was proud of the job her boys did here on the podcast. And
well, she should
so.
Be. Yep. Yeah, they did a great job. Always appreciate you listening. Hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and the Cavanaugh Auto Group.